This morning we'd like to add something that we left out of our series this past summer called Honky Tonks, Hymns, and the Blues. The series covered everything from accordion players to women in country music. We never meant to include everything, but some of the creators of this series decided that there is one more thing just too important to ignore. The banjo. So we asked musician and historian Stephen Wade to bring by several banjos. Good morning, Mr. Wade.
How you doing?
I think of the banjo as a country instrument, as a rural instrument, but you learned about it first in Chicago.
Well, Chicago has long embraced Southern music, as you know, with the blues and, of course, and country music, too. Since early in the city's history, in the 1850s, there's the establishment of the sheet music industry, followed by manufacturing of instruments, and then the great mail-order houses get going in the 1870s and 1880s. And what happened to me with that is that my teacher's teacher, Doc Hopkins, had come up to Chicago and to sing on the National Barn Dance, which was owned by WLS, which was Sears Roebuck, the world's largest store. So that connection of exporting and importing music is right there. And then Doc had been playing since he was a little boy, and the first banjo he had was just a little, well, I brought one very much like it, a little homemade, hand-whittled wooden banjo with a little possum skin for the drum that carries the sound. And so these are a couple of tunes that Doc showed me how to play.
Stephen Wade playing an old tune that he learned from Doc Hopkins on a banjo that looks
fretless banjo.
I want to just describe this. This looks very different. I think when people think of the banjo, they imagine something that looks about like a tambourine with a guitar fretboard sticking out of it and some strings. But this is more like one continuous piece of wood. This is like an ancient carving or something.
Well, that's right. The earliest kind of banjo found in the United States are made out of gourds, actually. So you take a small pumpkin and carve out the inside and cut off the top and stretch a skin over it and tack it on and let it dry out. And that comes here probably through the slaves who worked on the sugar plantations in the Caribbean.
I was interested to read that this instrument, the banjo, began as an instrument that was played by African Americans, that was played by slaves and freedmen, but that at a certain point it became popular, or there was an effort to make it popular for Victorian ladies.
Yeah, I brought here a banjo that is of that era, and just as the guitar was a parlor instrument and played by the Victorian ladies that you've described, the banjo was as well, and it was played in what was quite consciously a guitar style, and a guitar tune that reveals that is a piece called Spanish Fandango. I try to play that for you, and
that's beautiful.
Thanks.
And you can hear that effort to be a little more genteel, a little more refined, if that's the word.
And it had been written in that guitar music as a waltz, but I didn't play you a waltz. I learned this from a 1938 Library of Congress recording of a banjo player from Woodbine, Kentucky named Pete Steele. And I also learned it as well from a New York banjo player named Tom Paley. Again, city and country. And that movement is always going on with this music.
Because people were moving back and forth.
Sure. The countryside wasn't really as divided from the city, I don't suppose.
Well, let's go back into the countryside here and listen to what is being played on another kind of banjo as we get toward the end of the 19th century.
A person that I knew a little bit, I visited in the summer of 1980, was a man named Chesley Chancy. Chesley, during the time of Prohibition, had lived in North Georgia, and he would drive liquor from Georgia through Atlanta up to Chicago, in fact. And he told us about getting into Atlanta and getting his car repainted and the bullet holes filled and the license plates changed and all that stuff. But when I saw him, he showed me this tune. I should tell you that Chesley died 2 weeks after I saw him. And he said that this was the oldest tune he knew. It had been taught to him by his grandfather. And he said, if you ever played for the people, just say that you learned it from Chesley Chancy.
Stephen Wade playing one of several banjos he's brought to Studio 2A here in National Public Radio.
That was Mulberry Gap from Chesley Chancy.
It's interesting that the popularity of the banjo has moved among different groups, urban, rural, black, white, Victorian ladies, sharecroppers. Different groups have loved this instrument and also derided it, hated it at different times.
Chicago cornetist Muggsy Spanier once said that to him a banjo sounded like a bunch of tin cans falling down the stairs.
And it can, I suppose.
But at the same time, there's other attitudes. I know that in 1963, in October 1963, a great Virginia multi-instrumentalist named Hobart Smith came to Chicago. And Hobart stayed with my teacher, Fleming Brown. And Hobart told Fleming, he said, the way it was me, I'd be out in the fields working. I'd hear a good fiddle tune or a good banjo piece. I'd go home keeping it in my mind. I'd whistle all the way into the holler in the mountain, and my banjo would be hanging on the wall. And sometimes I'd forget where it was at, and I'd whistle right loud, and that banjo would answer me. And I'd go and get her. And I'd find that tune, those strings, before I quit, because I loved it. I loved it. And this is one of the tunes that Hobart played on this banjo.
Stephen Wade is a musician, historian, and the creator of the one-man show, Banjo Dancing. Next month, he'll be playing a concert called Chicago and the Five String at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago.